We're reaching one of the points of climax in the ministry of our Lord. Up until now, he's made four claims as to the I Am. And he said, I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world. I am the door. I am the good shepherd. Tonight we find the fifth one. I am the resurrection and the life. And that's the central theme of this particular chapter we want to deal with. Now there'll be two other I Ams. I am the way, the truth, and the life. Another, I am the true vine, and my Father the husbandman. These are seven I Ams that Jesus claimed in the Gospel of John. It's interesting also that there were seven signs or miracles recorded in John. The first was the turning of the water into wine. We remember that one, I'm sure. And then we remember the one where he healed the nobleman's son. And then his walking, his feeding the 5,000 and walking on the water made four of them. And then the healing of the blind man was five, is that right? And then another one in there, and then this one is the seventh one. This is the final one. And I think the greatest of all of them, of course. In this, he not only claimed to be the light of the world, he claimed to be the life and the resurrection, but he demonstrated that by raising Lazarus from the dead. And this is our study tonight. In this. And another thing we've noticed as we've studied the book, gone through it, is the development of faith or belief on one hand and unbelief on the other. I'm thoroughly convinced that no individual can remain static when it comes to his attitude toward the Christ. His faith is going to grow, he's going to become stronger in his belief in him. On the other hand, it's going to slacken off, and after a while, it may just become a ho-hum thing, or maybe actual unbelief. But we see on the part of some that believed in him, on the other hand, that there were the Pharisees and their cohorts, they became more intense in their unbelief. And that reaches a climax in this chapter tonight, where they met together and determined that they had to put him to death. He talked about being the resurrection and the life, but they talked about putting him to death. So there are three major thoughts in our lesson tonight. First, is the sickness and the death of Lazarus. Then second, the resurrection or the raising of Lazarus from the dead by the Christ and his claim to be the resurrection and the life. And the third is the attitude toward the Pharisees as they met together and Caiaphas, the high priest that year, and the chief priest, meeting together there, determined that they had to put him to death. Because if this should go on and people would believe on him, the Romans would come and take away their nation there, believing that there was an opposition to them. Well, of course, they should have known better. This was not in opposition to any political government. This was strictly a spiritual government. But this we've seen now, and I think that's going to be the way of all mankind. You either believe in him and go stronger in it, or you'll become an unbeliever and go stronger and more intense in that. So we'll look first of all at the beginning of this. Now a certain man was sick named Lazarus. Lazarus of Bethany, of the village of Mary and Martha, his sisters. Bethany was about 2 miles. In fact, it was 1 mile and 7/8. And of course, that's so close, I don't know how you distinguish between that and about 2 miles. About 2 miles east of Jerusalem, across the Kidron Valley, and then just over the hill to the east. Well, this is their home. Mary and Martha are mentioned 3 times in the Bible, 3 different occasions, rather. You'll find Matthew and Mark relating, and John, all 3 relating one of them. But the first one is in the 10th chapter of Luke. You recall that Jesus was visiting in the home of Mary and Martha, and that was a good study in the attitude and disposition of the two women. Martha was busy about many things, cumbered about much serving. Mary chose the good part. She sat at the feet of Jesus and listened. An intensely spiritual woman. Now Martha was a good woman. Her character, she's like so many women. She was so busy about things about the house and all of that, and the family and those things, that she neglected the greater thing, which was the spiritual development, listening to Jesus. But another interesting thing about that is that this home was open to Jesus. Jesus spent apparently many pleasant hours there. Here was a man without a home, had not a place where to lay his head that he could call his own. And so it was a wonderful thing to have the home of these two wonderful sisters and their brother Lazarus, where he could drop in, and there, being away from the crowds, could no doubt enjoy a social hour and a relief from the work that he was doing. Then the second occasion is the one tonight in the 11th chapter, where their brother died and they sent for Jesus, and he came, or rather sent him word, and he came and raised him from the dead. And we have an insight again into the two women that I'll note, that I think manifests itself as it did in the 10th chapter of Luke. Then the third time is in the 12th chapter, where a leper was giving a feast. Jesus was invited, and so was Lazarus. Martha was serving, as usual. Mary took a pound of nard, pure nard, and anointed the feet and the head of Jesus, wiped his feet there with her hair, preparing him for his burial. Now Matthew and Mark both mention this. They both relate this incident there. There's an interesting thing about Lazarus here, and that is that this incident is not mentioned by Matthew, Mark, or Luke, the raising of Lazarus from the dead. That has led some individuals to think that actually this was not a happening, didn't really happen, but that John, I guess you have to say, fabricated it, which of course none of us believe. I know it's interesting, why did these others not mention it? Well, my own view of it is that God used Matthew, Mark, and Luke to present Jesus from one point of view, and the Holy Spirit guiding them. They omitted this, and that was left for John, whose whole purpose was to show the deity of Christ, and this would be a supreme thing in it. But for whatever reason, I don't know, they didn't mention it, but John does. Of course, everybody believes the Bible, believes in his power to raise the dead as well as restore sight to the eyes or anything else. But that's one of the questions that scholars so-called raise concerning. Now, this then introduces this family, the two sisters and their brother. Apparently, they lived together. Now, notice, and it was that Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment. Mentioned in Matthew and Mark, and also in the 12th chapter of John's Gospel, which we'll notice next Sunday night. And wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. Now the sisters therefore sent word unto him, saying, Him who thou lovest is sick. Now they didn't tell him to come, but I think they knew that if Jesus realized he was that sick, that he would come. They simply sent word that he was sick. Well, Jesus delayed his coming for 2 days, and there was a purpose in that. And that purpose was that he might perform this unusual miracle of raising Lazarus from the dead after he had been dead or buried for 4 days. So he stayed there for 2 days and probably took more time coming, getting there, giving him time to die, and that he might raise him from the dead, might give him back unto them. But you remember that when he said that he must go, as Lazarus was sick, we will go. They said, yes, but Rabbi, why, they were just now seeking to stone you to death. Are you going back into that? Jesus said, yes, I must go. I think that indicates in a very clear way Jesus' attitude toward the work that he come to do, toward his duty here. He had a job to do. But when this came up, here's an interesting statement in that. Drop down to about verse 9. Jesus answered, Are there not 12 hours in the day? If a man walk in the day, he stumbleth not, because he seeth the light of this world. But if a man walk in the night, he stumbleth, because the light is not in him. These same things spake he, and after this he said unto them, Our friend Lazarus is fallen asleep, but I go, that I may awake him out of sleep. Now there are 12 hours in the day. Now the Romans and the Jews both estimated the day was from sunrise to sunset, 12 hours. From sunset to sunrise, 12 hours. Well, that meant the hours would change from season to season. In the summertime, they were longer hours. In the wintertime, they would be longer. They would be shorter in the summer, longer in the winter. So, but the point is this. Here we have the 12 hours in which to do our work. Now, if I walk in the light, we'll not stumble. I am the light of the world. As long as I walk in the light and I have a job to do, there are 12 hours a day in which to do that job. So I'm going to go to Lazarus and fulfill my mission here. Now, I think this is related to John 9, 4 and 5. Why we must work the works that set me while it is day. The night cometh when no man can work. While I'm in the world, I am the light of the world. So that related to this, he's the light of the world. Now then, here is the physical light. Men walk in that light, they don't stumble. Walk in the darkness, they do. I am the light. Now what I'm about to do, I'll do it in the day, the 12 hours of daylight, when I should be doing this work. I think something like that is what he has in mind when he makes this statement here of the 12 hours. It looks like I always had a little problem with that, of breaking in like that, but I'm sure that the idea was, here's a day in which to work, and I must work while it is day, and a part of my work is now to confirm the fact that I am what I claim to be. So they said, all right, we'll go with him. Now, notice another thing. Our friend Lazarus is asleep, but I go that I may wake him out of sleep. Now, the disciples therefore said unto him, Lord, if he's fallen asleep, he will recover. Now, Jesus has spoken of his death, but they thought that he spake of taking rest in sleep. Now, there are several Greek words for sleep. This particular word occurs 18 times in the New Testament, and 15 of those times it refers to death. It's the sleep in death, and only 3 times of taking rest in sleep. Rather unusual word. The other words just meant physical sleep at all times. But this one had that significance. Now, Paul talks about those that are asleep will Christ bring with him and raise from the dead those that are asleep. So it's not unusual. I mean, it's not an unusual thing for Jesus or for the New Testament to speak of death as a sleep, out of which Christ will wake us, all mankind, eventually. So, but now then he goes on to say here, they thought that he spake of that. Then Jesus therefore said unto them plainly, Lazarus is dead. And he said, I'm glad for your sake that I was not there, to the intent that you might believe. Right? So he's going to use this as an occasion now to perform what I would consider the greatest miracle. If one is greater than another, and this one would be, I think, a little greater than any of them, the raising of an individual from the dead that had been dead for 4 days this particular time. So he's going to take this as an occasion to do that, to demonstrate the fact that I am the resurrection and the life, demonstrating his ability and power to raise individuals been a long time dead, you see. So he's glad for your sake, because this is going to increase, or should increase, your faith. It'll increase the faith of others who are growing in that faith in me. It will also then divide the believers from the unbelievers, and these unbelievers will take this as an occasion to determine my death because of the claim that I will make, because of the influence it will have. And so the Lord then says, I'm going to go unto it. Now Thomas therefore, called Didymus, which means one of a twin, he said, now notice what he says, said unto his fellow disciples, let us go, that we also may die with him. Now we oftentimes talk about doubting Thomas, and Thomas the doubter, and all that, and I think Thomas was a little more pessimistic than the rest of them. But this was a statement of courage. If Jesus is going there, and they were trying to put him to death, or talking about it before, now, if they put him to death, I'm going to go and die with him. So he's a man of courage. He's not going to be stopped by this. He's going to go with the Lord and stand by him. Now, it's true, he didn't believe he'd been raised from the dead when he was told that. But when he was proved or was convinced of it, his cry was, my Lord and my God. In the 20th chapter, we'll get to that later on. One of the greatest confessions of faith that a Jew could possibly make. So there are a lot of fine qualities about Thomas. in spite of the fact that he's so often spoken of as Thomas the Doubter. Well, he did. Thomas the Pessimist. I don't know that he was particularly pessimistic. He just wanted to be sure of a thing, and he was a little slow to decide some things. But anyway, respect what he said here. I go that I would die with him. Now, Jesus come. Now, the second part of the chapter is Jesus coming now and his raising Lazarus from the dead. Right, they left, and when they had arrived there, after 4 days' delay here, and he'd been in a tomb 4 days rather already. Now, Bethany was right at Jerusalem there. Now, Martha was in a home there. They were weeping over the death of the brother. But someone came and told her that Jesus was coming, where she would meet him. So Martha then left and came to meet Jesus, slipped out of the house and came to meet him. I want us to look at Martha for just a moment. As we said a while ago, Martha was one of these practical women. She was busy about that. She was back in Luke there, was preparing for this visitor that was with them there, and disturbed that her sister wasn't helping her, and wanted the Lord to tell her sister to help her with this work. But Jesus said, "No, Martha, she's chosen the good part. Now that the greatest of all of them. That is to learn of these spiritual matters." And so now then Martha again, as she comes to him, notice her first words here. When she came unto him, to Jesus, her words were, "Lord," about verse 21, "if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died." There's a little bit of a kind of a rebuke in that. You ought to come on when we sent for you, when we sent you word that, "if you'd been here, our brother had not died." And yet, Mary says the same thing. But there's an interesting difference in the way that the two women say that. One of them emphasizes "my brother," and the other one, "my brother." And I think that also further demonstrates a difference in the two women there, the tenderness of the one and the other kind of a, well, she controls her, possessive type of woman. She wanted to possess her sister. "Tell her sister to come help me here." And now, yeah, my brother. Emphasizing that, we'll get to that in a moment. But anyhow, "my brother had not died. And even now I know that whatsoever thou shalt ask of God, God will give thee." That's a strong expression of faith, isn't it? But it seems to me that it fell a little bit short. For when Jesus said, "Open this tomb, move the stone away," she was the one that said, "Why, Lord, the body's been in there 40 days, stinking." That's literally how the King James, American Standard changed the old King James Version. King James Version says he's stinking. And that is literally what the Greek word meant. But a little more sophisticated would be it decayed. And, in a state of decay, it'd be the odor there. But at any rate, she noticed that. She said, "Whatsoever thou shalt ask God, God will do it." Well, that's a strong expression of faith. But I don't think she realized what Jesus was going to do. I don't think that she comprehended that. Now notice Jesus saith unto, "Thy brother shall rise again." Now notice Martha's further statement here, which is interesting to me in the light of the fact that so little emphasis is put on the resurrection in the Old Testament. Now there are a few passages, yes, that demonstrate that, declare that, but they're rather rare. The emphasis back there is on the present life. And to the Jew, the life beyond the death was just sort of a shadowy existence. It was not clear cut, more of a shadowy sort of a thing. But now Martha, notice what Martha says, "And I know that he shall rise again in the resurrection at the last day." Apparently, Jesus, in visiting with them and talking to them, and talked about the resurrection and other things he had said about the resurrection, she had realized now there would be a resurrection in the last day. You take the 5th chapter and the 6th chapter of John, where Jesus there talked about they'd be raised in the last day and so on there. So she believes that he'll be raised at the last day there, in the last day. But now notice Jesus' statement. I want to come back to this later and just really read it now and pass on from it. Jesus said unto her, "I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth on me, though he die, yet shall he live. He that believeth, and whosoever liveth and believeth on me shall never die. Believest thou this? Now, I want to come back and talk about that in a few moments toward the close of our study. And it's an interesting way that he puts it there. We want to note the various resurrections that Jesus talked about. But now moving on, leaving it for just now, believest thou this? Now notice Martha's further expression of her faith. She saith unto him, Yea, Lord, I have believed that thou art the Christ, the Son of God, even he that cometh into the world. Know those three statements. I have believed that thou art the Christ, the Son of God, he that cometh into the world. That is the one that God had promised throughout the Old Testament. So Martha, although a very practical woman, and I think maybe like so many women today, believe all right, but maybe don't put the emphasis on that that Mary did. Mary was more of the spiritual type of woman, thought more about these matters. But now she said, yes, if you'd been here, he had not died. But now that you have come, whatever you ask of God, God will do it. Yes, I believe that he'll be raised in the last day at the resurrection, the last day, the day of the resurrection. I believe all that. Yes, I believe that thou art, and I believe that thou art the Christ. You're the Son of God. You are the one that had been promised unto us. So the woman, that shows a strong development of faith on the part of this woman and over against the belief of some others there. There's another statement she makes in just a moment when she comes back and tells Mary, the teacher is come and calleth thee. All right, she recognizes as the teacher. But God had said back in the Old Testament, he would send one here and speak his word. He would be the great supreme teacher. She believes that. So here's a woman who had developed what I would consider a strong faith, practical faith in this matter, while at the same time she was a practical woman about the house and all of that. We're just looking at the disposition of these various ones as we go along. Well, after that, she went away then and called Mary and her sister secretly, saying, the teacher is here and calleth thee. Well, Mary then immediately rose in a hurry and hurried on out. Well, those Jews that were there consoling her. Notice it speaks of these Jews who were there consoling her. And yet, with what did they have to console her? Before Jesus came, the consolation at times of death were rather limited, weren't they? But they were there consoling her. But with that consolation, don't you imagine it was sort of empty? The consolation outside of Jesus Christ, outside of what he had done for us, would be a very empty consolation to any individual suffering the loss of a loved one. So that the Christian, as Paul tells the Thessalonians there, that grieve not as those that have no hope. Why, yes, I'm coming to look more and more, as I said when the death of dear Sister Woodward, I'm coming more and more to look upon death of the Christian as a victory, as an occasion of rejoicing. I know we don't do that. I know we grieve and all of that. But what do we grieve for? Isn't it really a selfish grief? Why? Because they're gone. We've lost their presence with us. If we really believe that an individual who dies, the Christian that dies, the spirit goes into the presence of God, relieved of all the physical suffering now. The body goes back to the dust, that's true. Decays. But it's going to be raised after a while. So really, the death of the saint ought to be an occasion of rejoicing. Most of you know Harry Pickup Jr. Well, his father was a great man. He was 3 years and 3 days older than I am, and we were very close friends. His mother-in-law lived with them, a wonderful woman. She and my mother were great friends and visited back and forth across a fairway of a golf course. We lived on one side. They lived on the other there. Visited a great deal there. But when Nanny died, Brother Harry Sr. preached a funeral. Why, he made it an occasion of rejoicing. Let's not weep, let's rejoice. He told funny incidents from her life and all of that. That was a great woman she was all that. But his idea was that she had suffered so much, two broken legs. She got up and stumbled, broke her leg right here, halfway from the hip to the knee. That was just getting well, and she got up to take a walker to walk somewhere and stumbled over something and fell and broke the other leg in about exactly the same distance from me to here. Well, I went over to say, I remember so well. Homer, why does the Lord not call me? Why am I still alive? I want to go home. I want to go. She did. She meant that. Well, now that she was gone, Brother Pickup made that an occasion of rejoicing. And I think that was right. I think that's the way it should be. And so I think we need to look at this a little differently. Jesus, I think, is trying to teach that here in this and all of that. So the teachers come, and so Mary came and rose quickly. But what I was talking about was that these Jews who were with her in the house were consoling her. And my mention was so little consolation that those Jews could offer apart from Jesus Christ. So little consolation you can offer any person today concerning life beyond this or death apart from the work of Jesus. And so they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to weep there. Mary, therefore, when she came where Jesus was and saw him, fell down at his feet. Notice a difference in Mary and Martha. Martha came, when she came, said, Lord, if you'd been here, my brother had not died. Mary comes and falls down at his feet in adoration and worship. Lord, if you'd been here, my brother had not died. But according to the Greek, the transposition of the my and the brother there indicates the emphasis placed on it. Now, the way Martha said it, my brother had not died. The way that Mary said it, same words, but with a different emphasis, my brother had not died. One of them is a more of a possessive, may I say, selfish attitude or thought in it, and the other is more of a tender, loving attitude. My brother. One is my brother. The other is my brother. There's a great deal of difference in the way you say a thing, isn't there? That's also often illustrated in the Greek, which the English may not be able to unless you're talking to a person. And no way puts the emphasis there. And so one of them, it was my brother. The other, it was my brother. Had not died. Same words. And so this was her thought there. Now notice when Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews also weeping who came with her, he groaned in the spirit and was troubled and said, where have you laid him? I want to look for just a moment at the three expressions of emotion here. The Jews and Mary were weeping. Now that the word used there is a word that meant to wail or to sob, a loud expression of grief. And you've been to funerals where individuals would weep and wail loudly and sob there and all that. Sometimes you wonder if it's genuine, and sometimes you know that it is. I preached some funerals where, knowing the people and the attitude before this person died, and to me they were putting on a show, and I'd try not to judge them, but that's the way it looked to me, where it was a wailing and loud and all that, but they hadn't shown any of that beforehand. So was that grief genuine, or was that for appearance? Well, only God knows. And so we leave it with him and the individual there. But now this was weeping. Now Jesus groaned within himself. Now that word is the same word that is used for to snort, as a horse snorts. So he groaned within himself there. And the alternate and the reading is here, groaned within himself here. And the footnote says of that groaning here, he was moved with indignation in the spirit. Moved with indignation. I don't know what he was indignant at, and if that's correct, if he was moved with indignation, that would be because in the presence of sin, a death rather, the result of sin, he was indignant in the presence of it. But I think maybe a better translation, and this is the one given by one commentary that I think is very good, he said it probably meant he was moved. He was deeply moved. Moved with sympathy. So here, whether he snorted there in indignation, the present there, he did it silently within himself. But I think he was moved with sympathy. He was sympathetic, and so he groaned within himself in the presence of the weeping individual. Now the third expression. verse 35, and Jesus wept. Now that verb, and that is a verb, Jesus wept, found weeping there. That verb occurs only here in the New Testament. It's the only time you have this particular verb, Jesus wept. Now that, it comes from the word tears. Now when Jesus shed tears, it's the same word only in the noun form. But the verb occurs only here, Jesus wept. That means that tears trickle down his cheeks here. A silent weeping as he shed tears at this time. So we have the three words there. The Jews and Mary weeping, that word meant a loud, sobbing, wailing type of mourning. And then Jesus indignant within himself, or his deep sympathy there, groaned within himself, an expression of his feeling there. Then Jesus wept, the silent tears as they flowed down his cheek, indicating there that he shared with them the loss of this one, although he knew what he was going to do. He knew what he would do. But you see the human side of Jesus here. As the human side, the divine side knows what he's going to do. The human side shares with them in their grief. As here he's sympathetic, and the tears roll down his cheeks here upon this occasion. A very, I think, moving thought. A very beautiful thought, as it suggests unto us the tenderness of Jesus, our Savior. Now, he could be hard, yes, but basically tenderness, sympathy, love, kindness were chief characteristics of our Savior. We ought to love that. All right, so we move on. And he said, where have you laid him? They say unto him, Lord, come and see. And Jesus wept and shed the tears there. And moving on from that, the Jews therefore said, behold how he loved him. But some of them, that is the Jews, said, could not this man who opened the eyes of him that was blind have caused that this man also should not die? Well, there's a question among them. Jesus therefore again groaning, the same word we have up above there, that is being this deep sympathy in himself, cometh to the tomb. Right? Now, here's a tomb, and this tomb would be among other tombs. Here were tombs all around him here, filled with the decayed bodies of individuals who had maybe died recently a long time. It didn't matter. But what were these the result of? They were the result of the sin of Adam. Because as John Paul said there, that sin entered into the world through one man here, and that was Adam, and death through sin. For all of these graves are the result of sin. They're the result there of violation of the law of God. No doubt that impressed him and touched him here. And he was face to face with all of this. Jesus said, now come to the command, take you away the stone against it. Jesus, stone. Martha, the sister of him that was dead, saith unto him, Lord, by this time the body decayeth, or the body stinketh. For he hath been dead 4 days. But at any rate, a while ago she said, yea, Lord, anything you ask God, I know God will do it for you. But I guess she overstated herself, don't you reckon? Sometime we do. But here's another thing about faith, people, that I learned a long time ago. I learned it from Abraham. Abraham's faith was great. But you remember that Abraham could believe what God would do in the future, make a great nation out of it. But when Abraham came faith to faith with an immediate situation down in Egypt there, then his faith was a little different, wasn't it? He wanted to help God out by lying about Sarah. Isn't that characteristic of all of us? You see us all in the Bible. We believe God concerning something way down the line that we can't do anything about anyhow. So we believe that God will raise us from the dead. We believe that God will do this or that. But when it comes right down to the immediate moment, how much faith do I have that God can do something right now? Isn't there a lot of difference in the two? Have you noticed in your life? I have in mine. Yes, I can believe what God's going to do down yonder. Raise me from the dead, give me a glorious body, take me home to heaven. I believe that. But now here's something right now today. Do I doubt or question God? That was Martha. Martha said, yes, I know he's going to be raised in the resurrection. Jesus said, remove the tomb now. So there's a difference in the future and the present, isn't there? Do you find that with you? Think about it. A good point to ponder, to meditate on. Do I have a join? Am I a part of the whole crowd along that line? Jesus saith unto us, said I not unto thee that thou believest, thou should see the glory of God? So they took away the stone, and Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, now here's a prayer to his Father. The Father is to get the glory for this. Father, I thank thee that thou heardest me, and I knew that thou hearest me always. But because of the multitude that standeth around, I said it, that they may believe that thou didst send me. And what he wants to know is strengthen thy faith. So now then, he's going to call Lazarus from the dead. And then he said, when he had spoken, he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. He that was dead came forth, bound hand and foot with grave clothes, and his face was bound about with a napkin. That was the Jewish way of burial. Jesus said unto him, loose him and let him go. Now, if he was bound, and generally the way was, they bound the legs, just around, instead of one leg at a time. Now, either he was bound with one leg at a time, or when God raised him from the dead, he helped him to get out there where they could see him. Then Jesus said, loose him. And they, that came up here to under the shoulder, they would bind to here, then a napkin or a band around his head there, when they would bury one. So Jesus said, release him. Now, here's an interesting thing. How many occasions do you have in the New Testament where Jesus raised an individual from the dead? Three, don't you? The first is that in the 8th chapter there, we'll use it first. When Jesus went into the home of Jairus and raised his little daughter, she had just died. They brought him word, she had just died. But he went on in anyway. Here was where he raised one before the funeral, immediately after death. Now, in the 7th chapter of Luke, you have the occasion where Jesus came to the village of Nain, and as he neared the city, here came a procession, bring a lad dead on the to place him in the tomb. All right, so this would be at the funeral. And Jesus stopped them, touched the bier, and said, arise, and he arose from the dead there. Jesus turned, gave him back to them. Here was one resurrection shortly after death, before the funeral. There's another resurrection at the funeral. Now then, Lazarus here is 4 days after the funeral, when the body was decayed. Now somebody might say of the first two, well, he just sort of swooned away. He wasn't really dead. Well, here's a person who'd been dead for 4 days. There can be no question about this resurrection. And so he raises him from the dead. Now, let me look at Jesus' statement for just a moment here before our time is gone. I am the resurrection and the life. Let's go back to that now. Back here in verse 25. Jesus said, I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth on me, though he die, and that would be physical death, yet shall he live. So, if an individual die, I'm the resurrection. I'll raise him from the dead. Now notice further. And whosoever liveth and believeth on me shall never die. What's that death? That's the spiritual death. So the individual that believes on him is going to die physically, but the individual that lives and believes will never die spiritually. Now, I think that goes back then to the 5th chapter and the 24th verse. Jesus said, the hour cometh and now is when the dead shall hear the voice of the Son of God, and they that hear shall live. Now who are they? Those are the ones that Paul said were dead in sin and trespasses. They'll hear the voice of Christ in the gospel, and they'll be raised up to a new life there. Then he goes on to say in verses 28 and 9, marvel not at this, for the hour cometh when all that are in the tomb shall hear his voice shall come forth. They that have done good to the resurrection of life can never die, you see. They have done evil to the resurrection of damnation or condemnation. So there in the 5th chapter, he introduced this thought that now here in the 11th chapter, he allowed Lazarus to go ahead and die that he might demonstrate the truth and the power that he mentioned back yonder. Now, Paul used the word sleep a number of times for death. Paul also speaks of the resurrection of the body, that when Jesus descends with a shout, the voice of the archangel, the trump of God, then the dead in Christ will be raised first. And then we that are left shall be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, and caught up to meet the Lord in the air. Now, in that passage in 1 Thessalonians 4, 1 Corinthians 15, where Paul is talking about the resurrection of the dead, he doesn't include the resurrection of the wicked in either one of those. But in other places, he speaks of the resurrection, both of the good and the bad, you see. For all are going to be raised. Jesus taught that all would be raised. But Paul, in writing to Christians, was concerned only with the resurrection of the righteous of the Christians, who would be raised in that day with an immortal, glorified body. All of this now is for the encouragement of individuals. So when Jesus said, "I'm the resurrection and the life," I raise individuals from spiritual death. Ephesians 2, Paul said, "You need to make alive when you were dead through your trespasses and sins." Colossians 2:12, "Having been buried with him in baptism, when you were raised through faith in the working of God," raised up here, a new creature there. Set your mind on things above and so on. If you're raised together with Christ, seek those things that are above. So here, Christ is the power of our resurrection from spiritual death unto life with him. He's also the resurrection, guarantee of the resurrection of the body at the end of time. And so you can see a development and a progress here in his teaching. Now then, many believed on him. But the Pharisees went away, and the chief priests, therefore, and the Pharisees gathered a council. What shall we do? For no notice further. For this man doeth many signs. They didn't deny the signs. Now, that's the marvel to me, how they couldn't deny the sign, but they denied the power back of the sign. How can one do that? I don't know. But they did. And so they go on, they said, "If we keep on here, why, the Romans will come take away our nation." So Caiaphas, who was high priest, that's where, said, "You know nothing at all. It's expedient that one die for the nation rather than the whole nation die." That was a prophecy. Although he was a wicked man, God used him to make a statement there. That was true. That truth was that he would die not only for the nation, but for all men as well. So this chapter, a great chapter, and this wonderful miracle here, confirms the fact that he's the Christ, the Son of God. Now Martha said, "You're the Christ, you're the Son of God, you're the one that was sent, the one that was to come, you're the teacher, you're all of that. And I believe that you'll raise us from the dead, I believe all that." So she shows a great faith there, but it's something that Christ can do in the future, not at now, but he proved that he can do it now as well as then. So this, to me, is the one that we've reached a climax in this, and the next chapter, the 12th, is kind of about the same type of a climax from a different point of view here. This is the climax of his miracles, according to John, but we'll reach another climax next Sunday night in the 12th chapter. So we'll leave the lesson with us there. I think it ought to be a lesson of encouragement to us, as Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead back there. After 4 days in death, he can raise my body. When he comes back, he called it from the dead. And the fact is that Lazarus come forth, only one person responded. Next time, it'll be all of you come forth, and we'll all answer. We'll rise. Let's stand together while we sing the song from Selected.